Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 371 for May 28th, 2012. This weekend I'm on the road, or more specifically, at the track. As I record this, I'm sitting in the stands near the legendary Yard of Bricks, the start-finish line at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's Indy 500 weekend, and I'm back home again in Indiana for the race. There's no whiskey-related reason for me to be here, but there are some very personal reasons. But there is plenty of whiskey news to discuss this weekend. Coming up in a few minutes.
I met the warehouse supervisor out there, and he is sort of touching 40 years experience. And he just turned to me and he says, "Isn't it fantastic that we're seeing old whiskeys like this come back?" And there was almost a kind of an emotional sort of lump in his throat. It was very good.
Kevin O'Gorman is the master of maturation for Irish distillers at Middleton Distillery, and this week marked the revival of an Irish pot still whiskey gone for more than 40 years. Yellow Spot is back, and Kevin will tell us how he and his colleagues recreated an Irish classic later on. I'll also have the calendar of events, the comments of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department.
Whiskey Cast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases, and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Scotland's government has decided to impose minimum pricing on alcohol in an attempt to fight alcohol abuse. The move means consumers will have to pay at least 50 pence per unit of alcohol, which is intended to cut down on cheap booze. It'll raise the price of a 1 liter bottle of whiskey in Scotland by 22%, according to the Scotch Whiskey Association, which has blasted the move and expects legal challenges to it under European Union trade rules. The big winner will be retailers. Well, they'll have to raise their prices. Studies have forecast that the minimum pricing plan will generate more than £100 million in profits at the retail level. That's about $160 million. Meanwhile, Scotch whiskey is getting a lot of attention this week on the French Riviera. The Cannes Film Festival is underway, and the new Ken Loach movie, The Angel's Share, is being featured at the festival. Our good friend Charles McLean plays the role of a whiskey expert in the film. He is in Cannes this week, leading Scotch whiskey tastings as part of the movie's debut. Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear is not in Cannes. He's been in Taiwan on a trade mission to promote Kentucky bourbon, among other things. As I've mentioned before here on Whiskey Cast, Taiwan is one of the world's largest whiskey-consuming nations, but 90% of that whiskey comes from Scotland. Beshear is reported to have convinced several major Taiwan hotel operators to start stocking more Kentucky bourbon in their bars. He sees Taiwan as having major growth potential for bourbon exports. Jim Beam plans to start exporting more bourbon, at least a limited amount, in the duty-free market with the release of Jim Beam 1795. It'll be available exclusively at the Heinemann Duty Free Shop in Frankfurt Airport's Terminal 1. The bourbon is bottled at 47.5% ABV, and just 200 decanters are available at an expected price of €139, or about $215 at current exchange rates. Beam added the Devil's Cut bourbon to its travel retail lineup earlier this year. The McAllen has announced this year's plans for its Masters of Photography series. Legendary portrait photographer Annie Leibovitz will create the photos for this year's labels. Last year, Albert Watson had the honors, and the Scottish photographer Rankin started the series off 2 years ago. Leibovitz shot her photos at the distillery in Speyside. The limited edition release will be available this fall. Beagle is getting underway on Islay this weekend, and there's some news to report from the island. Lagavulin and Kalila have unveiled their festival bottlings. Lagavulin warehouse manager Ian MacArthur picked a 14-year-old cherry butt for the festival. It's been bottled at a cask strength 55.1% ABV. Kalila manager Billy Stitchell picked an 11-year-old cherry butt for his bottling at a whopping 60.1% ABV. Now that one should have the security guards at Isla's airport on the watch, since they've been known to keep bottles stronger than 60% ABV from being flown off the island. On neighboring Jura, the festival days are this Wednesday and Thursday, Jura plans to webcast some of the events at the distillery on the internet for the first time. I've posted a link at the WhiskeyCast website. 2 years ago this weekend, I was on Isla and Jura for the festival. And on race day, I was sitting in my room at the Burnside Lodge in Port Weems, listening to the Indy 500 radio broadcast on the internet. Ironically, Scotsman Dario Franchitti won the race that year. As I mentioned, I'm at the track this weekend, and while I was walking around near the garage area, I found some guys in kilts with a Scottish flag. Grant, Robert, and their friends traveled from Dundee in Scotland all the way to Indy. What prompted you guys to come over? And I know when we were talking before, it was a love for the late, great Jim Clark.
Jim Clark, absolutely. And obviously, Dario Franchitti. So we're here to support him.
Have you seen him at all this weekend?
Not in the flesh, no. But here we go.
The cars that are going by right now are competing in the Freedom 100, one of the support races in the Indy Lights series today. What makes this so special? I know this is your first time here, Grant, and what do you think of the place?
I love it. It's obviously a massive, massive race and a massive stadium. One of the biggest, well, the biggest in the world, isn't it? Just looking forward to seeing it.
Had you seen it on TV before?
I've seen it on TV, yeah, several times, yeah. But completely different when you're here, completely different.
And this is your fourth race. Tell me,
fourth Indy
race, and then you were here for a couple of the U.S. Grand Prix as well. You're an old hand at this now. For someone who wants to travel in from around the world, what should they know about coming to Indy that would make them want to come?
It's not publicized enough in Europe. I don't know why that is, because it's so staunch Formula One. But I've been to so many Grand Prix. I prefer Indy, more competitive. It's better, and the people are great. I'm here for the drink, you know.
And you're drinking, I hate to use the term American beer because that term is used very loosely, but Miller Lite and a Smirnoff Ice, and I won't ask what you think of the stuff, but I'm guessing it's nothing like the beers back home.
No, but if that's what they've got, we'll drink it.
And what's been the reaction to the Scottish Sol tire that you're carrying around in the kilts?
Just pictures. Everybody wants a picture. Fantastic, to be honest. Fantastic.
Okay, well, have a great weekend, guys.
Okay, thank you very much.
By the way, if you're traveling to Scotland at some point, Dario Franchitti put together some of his favorite driving routes a while back for Visit Scotland. I've posted a link to them on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page. Personally, I'd rather let Dario do the driving. And that's the week's news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Visit us on the web at glenmorangie.com or download our iPad app at the iTunes App Store. Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well made.
Time now for the comments of the week, brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. A great question on the Facebook page this week from Ivo Fanati in Markham, Ontario, Canada. Here's what he had to say. My Scotch collection is now north of 100 bottles, and my wife wants a more formal storage location that can also showcase the collection. She suggested the Best of Vasbo storage units from IKEA with full-length glass doors and glass shelves. I'm wondering what other collectors store their Scotch in. Well, we've had IKEA shelves and furniture in the past at our house, but the one time I put a bunch of bottles on top of an IKEA dresser, the top started sagging after a while, so I'd be very careful about putting that kind of stress on the shelf supports IKEA uses, especially if you're using glass shelves. Now, my good friend David Finkel from Philadelphia offered some advice after reading Ivo's question. Here's what he said. You've raised a very good question that has few perfect solutions. In a square foot of space, you can fit approximately 16 bottles with an aggregate weight of about 9 to 10 pounds. Plus, your collection is ever-expanding. So you really need a solution to store 125, 150, 200 bottles. The other issue is if your shelves are too deep, it becomes very difficult to see what you have. You said you wanted to display your collection for your friends to see. If you have a glass front, then the sunlight can impact the whiskey. I had a cabinet built and was assured it could handle the weight. It is not. I have to adjust the doors quite often because of settlement. IKEA does have some good solutions. The Expedite seems to be able to handle the weight. Each shelf will hold about 12 bottles, but it has no doors and cannot handle very tall bottles like Octomore. You'll also want space to store and display glassware, a water pitcher, etc. I know I didn't provide a solution. My intent was for you to learn from my mistakes. Now, I've had the privilege of seeing David's collection and his shelving. His advice is excellent, and I'm glad he shared it with us. Thank you, David. If you have something you'd like to share, you can always use our Facebook page or just email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And the comments of the week are brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. Now, Father's Day is coming up, and a personally engraved bottle of Johnny Walker Blue Label makes a great gift idea. Check with your local retailer for engraving options in your area, or visit johnnywalker.com for more details.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Anton Sweeney, spirit store foreman, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
What I like about Redbreast is so smooth, mellow, and just after one or two, you just kind of go into a state of a tranquility. I suppose you could say most breasts need a bit of a lift, but this breast gives you one hell of a lift.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. There's a Glenfiddich tasting on Wednesday evening at the Sanctuary Camelback Mountain Resort in Paradise Valley, Arizona, just outside Phoenix. Whiskey Live Australia is June 6th in Melbourne, and McTeers will hold its next whiskey auction that same day in Glasgow. The second Saturday single malt tasting at the Miner's Delight Inn in Atlantic City, Wyoming is on June 9th. Nicholson Perks will host Glenmorangie's Karen Fullerton for a tasting on June 11th in Stourbridge, England. Auchintosh Distillery's open day is June 16th near Glasgow, along with Whiskey Live at the Highland Games in the Chicago suburb of Itasca, Illinois. There's a complete calendar of whiskey events around the world at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Celebrating the 18th anniversary of Friends of Laphroaig this week at the distillery during Fagiel. Find out more at Laphroaig.com and claim your own square foot of Islay.
WhiskeyCast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. In 1886, William Grant set out to fulfill a lifelong ambition, to make the best dram in the valley. Today, a rarity in Scotland, Glenfiddich still remains independently owned by the fifth generation of the same pioneering family. This unique legacy of skill, passion and pride forges a long-term commitment to creating truly great single malt without compromise. Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To learn more about our award-winning range and join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you this time around by Jura Single Malt Scotch Whiskey. Ireland's Taoiseach Enda Kenny, that's Prime Minister Enda Kenny to the rest of us, was at Middleton Distillery in County Cork this week for a tour and to tout the worldwide growth in sales of Irish whiskey. It's one of the few bright spots in Ireland's troubled economy, and when Kenny was presented with a bottle of Middleton Very Rare from 1992, he pledged to not open it until he could celebrate the recovery of Ireland's economy with it. Ireland has been recovering more of its whiskey history recently. This week, Irish Distillers unveiled the latest addition to its single pot stills of Middleton series. Now, the name Yellow Spot may not mean much to whiskey lovers outside Ireland, but it's part of a special heritage unique to the Irish. Kevin O'Gorman is the master of maturation at Middleton and helped recreate this Irish classic.
Let's go into the history of the spots. We've discussed this before on WhiskeyCast with Heidi Donnellan from the Irish Whiskey Trail, but the spots really are something unique to Ireland, right?
Yeah, I mean, the history of the spot whiskies, I suppose, really started back with the Mitchell brothers. They actually opened their first shop in Dublin in 1805, and they were whiskey bonders, and basically what happened was they imported wine casks and fortified wine casks from Europe, Spain, Portugal, etc. So then they brought those wine casks back to Dublin, obviously emptied the casks, and then they used those casks for maturing whiskey. So they purchased the whiskies from various distillers, and Genesee Distillery was one of those. So what they did was, in order to identify their casks, they had a particular color. So, for example, Yellow Spot, one we're talking about, was a 12-year-old whiskey, and you had different colors to mark different ages of whiskey. So that's how they identified the cask with a double paint, and hence the name stuck, the Green Spot, Yellow Spot, Red Spot, Blue Spot, and that's how it all began.
And various pubs in Ireland would actually have labels identifying which spots they had, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was, again, there was different labels, and the label was the actual spot color, be it blue, yellow, or red, and that's how they were actually identified. So in this particular case, the Yellow Spot, it sort of disappeared off the markers in around early 1960s. That was the last time it was seen around Dublin. And it disappeared, and really what happened after that was last year. And you're aware, Mark, that we sort of repackaged Green Spot last year, May last
right.
year, as part of the single pot still launch. So to time it that, actually, just shortly after it, one of the IDL employees in Dublin happened to stroll into a little museum of Dublin. It's a small little museum. And they noticed two bottles. One was an old bottle of Green Spot, and one was an old bottle of Yellow Spot. So that sort of put the creative juices going. We spoke to the Mitchell brothers, and coincidentally, a lady rang in a few weeks before that to the Mitchell brothers saying that they actually had a bottle of Yellow Spot in their cupboard. So basically what happened next, Mark, was that we sat down with the Mitchell brothers and said, look, wouldn't it be fantastic to reintroduce the Yellow Spot? And we sat down with them here at the team in Middleton and came up with the Yellow Spot, and here we are.
Tell me about the process of recreating the Yellow Spot whiskey, as it were, since it hadn't been produced in 40 years, and I presume that the bottle that was in that museum and the bottle that the lady told you about are probably two of the few remaining bottles left.
Correct.
What did you guys do to recreate it?
What we did was, first of all, we made a trip to Dublin to meet the Mitchell brothers, Jonathan and Robert, and we sat down with them. We looked at the Yellow Spot, and we then looked through the old ledgers and logbooks which they had in place in the shop. And these are going back to the sort of 18th century or the 1800s. So a lot of old ledgers. So we looked through it and tried to take out as much information about the spots as possible, particularly the Yellow Spot. So what we found is that they used two types of fortified wine casks in the original Yellow Spot, Madeira and Malaga. So we also looked at the distillate style, what type of distillate it was. So we then went back to Middleton, the team here, and we put together the blend which we found most suitable to the Yellow Spot. And what we came up with was the use of three types of casks, the American cask, the sherry butt, and the Malaga butt. And I think it's turned out pretty well.
What are the taste differences between the Green Spot that we've come to know, that it, the one that survived over the years, and the Yellow Spot?
Yeah, I suppose just to give you a small bit of background on the Yellow Spot again, it's a single pot still, as you know, okay, made
right.
from a mash of barley and malt barley, distilled in our traditional copper pot stills, and matured in the three casks that I just mentioned, the American Barrel, the Sherry Butt, and the Malaga Butt. Now, it's 12 years old, okay, so minimum age on it is 12 years. So in terms of, I suppose, the comparison, the Yellow Spot, you have obviously extra age complexity, and you have the different combinations of wood as well. So it's quite, on the nose, it's nice. I mean, initially what I get is kind of a nice sweet note. It's quite a sweet whiskey. There's a honey sweetness, there's an element of peaches and fruit. And it has that element of complexity as well, and obviously nice and smooth. So that sort of makes it sort of different to the Green Spot. We wanted to make it different in some respects, but at the same time, in terms of distillate style, keep it in the same family as the Spot family. So that's what we tried to do.
Did you get to taste any of that old Yellow Spot?
We did, yes, we did. And I think along with... I actually met Jonathan Mitchell this week, and I think we've done a very good job. I think everybody's happy that we've come out very, very close to the original.
How did it taste after 40 years in the bottle, 40 plus years?
Tasted quite good. And again, there was a nice element of sweetness, a nice bit of spicy. It was quite spicy, and to be honest, it was very good, and surprisingly good. It was very good.
So it had held its age well. It had held
Yeah, it really does.
Tell me what it was like for you just to sort of go back, because obviously the yellow spot was gone when you were still a kid.
Yeah.
And so you never had any memories of it, but tell me what it was like going back to, for you to, as you're in the process of blending this and going through the entire steps to create this new whiskey, of going back and thinking what your predecessors had done. Tell me what was going through your mind.
To be honest, it was quite emotional, the whole thing, actually. Sort of, it's like getting an old friend back. I was actually mentioned to some people there during the week that when we were putting together the barrels for this a number of weeks ago, I met the warehouse supervisor out there, and he is sort of touching 40 years experience. And he just turned to me and he says, isn't it fantastic that we're seeing old whiskies like this come back? And there was almost a kind of a, an emotional sort of lump in his throat. It was very good. So for me as well, it's just great to see something like this coming back. Obviously down through the years, lots of whiskies have kind of gone their own way, discontinued for whatever reason. And just to see something great like this come back, to be honest, it's very, 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 very good. And of course, the rewarding thing is that to actually see it launched this week, and to see such a very good reaction as well is really good.
How many tries did it take you guys to get the recipe right?
We spent a few weeks at it, and you know, obviously not at it every day, but we spent a few weeks at it, just putting the various blends together, the sherry, the Malaga, the American cask. But you know, I mean, it, it took a few weeks, but we got there.
During that point, did you find a blend that actually worked really well, even though it wasn't reminiscent of Yellow Spot, that, could be used later?
I mean, that often happens when you're sort of in the process of blending or recreating whiskies. You come up with something, oh yeah, that's really, really nice and really fantastic, but it doesn't match what you're trying to do. You know, you might have maybe a little bit excess sherry, a bit too much Malaga, a bit too much American, and you change it around. So yeah, that often happens, and you know, that just happens. That's the nature of the process, really.
But you write those recipes down and hang on to
a future idea, right? we write them down. We do, absolutely. We take note of those casts and those particular recipes, yeah.
Now, for the bad news, this is not going to be very widely available, is it?
Yeah, Mark, that's kind of the disappointing news for...
at least for now.
At least for now, yeah. It's not going to be available in America. It's a small batch. It's 500 cases. So it's a very, very small batch. It's not available for now in America. Who knows what the future holds? But for the moment, no, it's not.
But it is available. But I should point out that the original Yellow Spot was never available in America either. So we're not missing anything.
Well, this is it. Yeah, this is it. But, we like to share as well, though. So hopefully, in the future, we'd like to maybe get some Yellow Spot over to you. But not for the moment.
For our listeners around the world, it will be available in Europe. I know in France, in Germany, and in the UK, and in other countries, I know that there's at least one online retailer, right?
Yeah, like in Ireland, we have sort of the Mitchell Brothers will be looking after distribution. You have the Whiskey Exchange in London. Then you have the Maison de Whiskey in France. And then you have Irish Lifestyle in Germany. So they're sort of they're the four that are doing it.
And I suspect it'll wind up at the duty-free at Dublin Airport for all those folks who fly through there on the way back at the big Irish whiskey shop there.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the immediate plans in terms of the airports, but it would probably be available in Dublin. I would say it would have to be available in Dublin, yeah.
Considering that the big whiskey shop at the airport seems to have every Irish whiskey currently being produced, I suspect it's going to be there.
Yeah, it would be pity to leave that. No, it will be at Dublin Airport. So a lot of visitors come through Dublin Airport. So yeah, it's going to be available there as well.
So how much fun has it been for you to bring back and to sort of be involved with the renaissance of Irish pot still whiskey?
It's been great. I mean, as you know, last May we launched a new single pot stills. We sort of repackaged the others, and now we've relaunched or reintroduced the Yellow Spot. It's been fantastic. It's been great to be part of it. It's the really sort of traditional style of Irish whiskey. That's the way it was made, many, many years ago. And it's great to see it come back like this. And I suppose the other rewarding thing from my point of view, I mean, I work in the distillery, but just meeting people in the market and the positive response to the taste, the aroma, the flavor, and it's really, really good. I'm delighted with it, I really am.
Now, let's be honest, your opinion is a bit biased here, but you were at it. You had the chance to show some people this earlier this week at a couple of tastings. What was their reaction to the revival of Yellow Spot, especially when they heard that Yellow Spot was coming back?
It was very, very positive. And again, I am a bit biased, maybe, Mark, but I can only sort of say what sort of the reaction I got on Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
We met lots of people involved in the whiskey and the drinks industry. And again, it was a surprise for a lot of people. It was unannounced. Okay, yes, we had a new launch, but they didn't know what it was. And then I think once we started explaining the history, and Jonathan Mitchell gave the history of the whiskey. I gave sort of the whole sort of selection of the casks and our dealings with Malaga and Sherry Butts. And I think they were really, really intrigued and very enthusiastic. And the taste went down pretty well as well, but we'll have to leave other people sort of to comment on that. But it was very, very good.
Now, your research with the Mitchell brothers also gave you some more insights into the other remaining spots, I believe, Blue Spot and Red Spot, or am I wrong on that?
Correct, yeah. Blue Spot and Red Spot, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But, so is it fair to assume that you might try to recreate those at some point in the future?
Yeah, Mark, but we've no immediate plans to do that, but certainly in the who knows what the future holds, but we've no immediate plans. I mean, we need to sort of, you know, dissect the whiskies, look at the makeup of the whiskies, and see what we'll do in the future, but there's no immediate plans to do something like that.
I have to ask, the bottle that woman contacted the Mitchell brothers with, did you guys wind up acquiring that bottle from her, or just a sample of it, or does she still have it, and... What prompted her to contact them?
It was just a phone call. She rang up the Mitchell brothers saying that she had a bottle of Yellow Spot. It was really coincidental with the bottle being found in the Little Museum of Dublin. And really, this actually happened. And it was just an amazing coincidence. And really, it put everybody thinking, God, wouldn't it be great to get Yellow Spot back in action again? So that's what happened. So we got a sample. But as far as I'm aware, she has the she still has the bottle. She kept the bottle. So.
I assume she's going to... Has she tried the new one?
Oh, I think we'll have to post on a bottle to her, but I don't think she has got it yet, but she'll be one of the first on the list, Mark.
Is this the only surviving bottle of Yellow Spot that you guys know of?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, there's just these two bottles. No, there may be other bottles, and maybe with the launch of this Yellow Spot, we might see more coming out of the cupboards, but as far as I'm aware, they are the only two bottles that we have.
But, and the Mitchells didn't keep any in their archives, and you guys didn't keep any. So
No. And again, I suppose that's the important thing about holding on to samples and holding on to old bottles. You never know when they come in handy.
And that's, I assume, and I know a lot of companies do this. That's what you guys are doing now with all your current releases, is that you're archiving batches and archiving samples of all this stuff for the next generation that might want to recreate, say, a Middleton Very Rare from 2010.
Yeah.
So that they can do that, right?
Yeah, I suppose if you look at it back in the 50s and 60s, like things like archiving and record keeping wouldn't have been, as good as it is these days. Now, lucky enough, the Mitchells kept very, very good logs and records, which allowed us to go back in time and sort of look what went into this whiskey. But nowadays, obviously, we've an archiving project here up and running in Middleton, and really we're very, very careful to hold on to what we have now, for the people in the future, because we're just going to, I suppose, end up passing this on. So that's very, very important for the future, you know.
While I've got you on the line, how's the expansion project coming? Has work actually started yet on it, or are you still in the planning stage?
Yeah. We got the planning some months ago. Things are advancing pretty well. Our brew house is sort of under construction at the moment. The shell of the building is going up. Some of the equipment is going in. The foundation for the still house are laid, and things are advancing pretty quickly. So next time you're over, Mark, we're going to give you a tour and see what you think.
Can't wait to see it all, because this is actually the first major expansion that's been done since Middleton was built, except for warehouses, right?
Correct, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So it's an exciting time. It's a busy time, but it's very, very exciting. So it's great.
When do you expect to have the renovation completed, or the expansion, I should say?
Plan is by sort of mid next year to have most of the distillery equipment up and running, sort of mid to late next year. And obviously the warehousing complex in Dungorny is going to continue over the years. We'll be building a certain number of warehouses every year. So that will be ongoing for a good number of years. But we hope to have a lot of the commissioning done sort of mid next year.
And that was the other question I was about to ask you, was about Dungorni with the second maturation complex. What do you look for when you're deciding on how, since this is your specialty, on how to set up that maturation complex and the warehousing complex at Dungorni? What input did you have and what specifics did you want?
Well, what we try to do is obviously keep the keep conditions consistent with what we have at the moment. So the warehousing build, the warehousing style is going to be almost identical to what we have here at the moment, our new style warehouses. So it's important to keep keep things consistent in terms of, you know, venting, the style of the warehouse, the height of the warehouse. So that's one of the, I suppose, the key aspects initially. Then we've all our issues like, you know, health and safety, fire, etc. So the warehouses are really going to be very well designed from a fire prevention point of view and a fire protection. So there's a number of key features, and really, I mean, we've sat down over the last sort of year, 2 years, designing these, and I'm pretty happy with the design, and the first one will be starting sort of early next year.
There's always this superstition among the distillers, and that when they decide to replace a still, they have to recreate it exactly right down to the last ding and dent. Is there any similar superstition among the maturation guys that take care of the warehouses?
Yeah, I mean, you have to keep the construction reasonably consistent. So you have to keep it reasonably consistent in terms of the warehouse build. So in terms of venting, the height of the warehouse, I mean, every warehouse is different. If you look at old-style warehouses, there's different levels of ventilation, different levels of venting, different heights of stacking. So you try to keep things consistent. So it is important. It's not just the stills that you have to keep the same. You try to keep the warehousing style consistent as well. So, yes, that would be important, yes.
Now, one of the things we've never really discussed in the past is that you guys do things a little differently at Middleton, in that you store barrels on their ends rather than on their sides in traditional style dunnage warehouses that people are familiar with. But you guys store the barrels on their ends and stack them. Does that make any difference?
No, we've started this about, it's well over 25 years ago now. So we stack all the barrels on the vertical, on the pallet, and we stack them 7 high. Now some of the warehouses are lower than that. We might stack 4 high or 5 high, depending on the style, you know, the height of the warehouse. But the majority now are stacked 7 high. And we found no difference. The cask is filled up to the top. The bung is put in place, and there's no difference in terms of the what you get out of the cask at the end of it. I suppose the key thing about, you know, maturation is the way you look after your cask. That's really the key to us, you know.
Does it make any difference in terms of leakage or evaporation? Do the angels get any more or any less when it's stacked on their sides?
No, it's pretty consistent. I mean, if we compare losses and outages from the old way of doing it on the horizontal. The difference is, to be honest, it's very, very small. And that would have been trial beforehand anyway, years ago when they moved to vertical stacking. But no, it's negligible.
And it makes it easier to move the barrels with a forklift on pallets rather than trying to schlep them around and roll them around the warehouse.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to move. I mean, we forklifts moving the pallets. It's a lot safer from a health and safety point of view. And I suppose the other factor that must be, you know, borne in mind is that it's a lot more gentler on the cask as well, because you don't have casks sort of rolling, thumping into each other or falling over, etc. So it's actually a lot gentler on the cask, so you don't get many leaks or leaking heads or damaged staves or any of that. So it's, we're treating our casks like babies, but it's a lot easier on the cask as well.
Well, those casks should be treated like babies. I mean, we're going to hang on to them for 21 years.
No, you said it, yeah. Treat them like babies, yeah. Absolutely.
I'm hoping to receive a sample of Yellow Spot soon. I'll have tasting notes for it on a future episode of Whiskey Cast. Whiskey Cast In Depth is brought to you this week by Jura Single Malt Scotch Whiskey. Visit the Jura website at isleofjura.com and learn how you could win a bottle of Jura Superstition. Now, I've received samples in the past few days of some of the whiskeys I've mentioned in the last couple of weeks on Whiskey Cast and had the chance to taste them. The What I'm Tasting This Week department is brought to you this week by Bal Blair. Since it's Fagiel Week, let's start off with the tasting notes for the sample I received of Ardbeg Day. It's the special Fage bottling that will be available only at the distillery, as well as a certain number of Ardbeg Embassy retailers around the world. Now, it's bottled at 56.7% ABV. The nose is predictably peaty with classic tar and creosote notes. There are some undertones of dried peaches and honey with a hint of vanilla that add a good balance on the nose. The taste is syrupy sweet for just a second or two. Then the peat kicks in. Strong, smoky, heathery, but it doesn't overpower the delicate sweet touches of honey and dried fruits underneath. The finish is smoky and lingering, an excellent festival bottling. I'm scoring the Ardbeg Day a 93. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned the Crown Royal XR Rare. It's the new addition to the Crown Royal Rare series and replaces the Crown Royal XR that was bottled with, or made rather, with whiskies from the old Waterloo Distillery in Ontario. Now, the new XR Rare has whiskies from the long-closed LaSalle Distillery in Montreal. It carries no age statement, but it's bottled at 40% ABV. The nose is light and aromatic at first, with ginger, soft oak, vanilla, honey, and straw notes. The taste has subtle spices at first, with a nice buildup of cinnamon. There's honey, vanilla, and touches of dark chocolate that linger in the background and last through the finish. Overall, a good balance, lingering well, very nice and complex. I'm scoring the new Crown Royal XR Rare a 91. The What I'm Tasting This Week department is brought to you by Bal Blair, whiskeys timed to perfection. You'll find my tasting notes, of course, in the free WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android, as well as at the WhiskeyCast website. And before I move on, I want just to talk for a brief second about why I came to Indianapolis and why I'm here at the Speedway this weekend. As I mentioned, we're recording this the day before the race. You've heard some noise behind me from the PA system. They're playing some highlights of old races. The final drivers' meeting and awards ceremonies were held earlier today. And you may hear in the background a car going by. Those are the pace cars that are going around the track, taking some dignitaries and special guests who've been given the honor of riding around the track. Now, as I've mentioned before, Indianapolis and the Speedway have a very special place in my history and my family's history. My father and I used to come to the race every year up until 1983, after I graduated from college in 84 and wound up moving off around the country. In fact, this will be the first weekend I've been back for the race since then. Now, regular listeners of WhiskeyCast will note that my father passed away 2 months ago this weekend. And I decided earlier this week, I had thought about coming back for the race with him and bringing him back for one last race earlier this year before he got sicker and suddenly passed away at the end of March. I decided earlier this week, or on Wednesday as a matter of fact, I said, you know what, I want to go back for the race. I was able to get a ticket online. My family was completely supportive and said, go, have fun. We know this means a lot to you. So I've driven back and spent the last couple of days here at the track, and I'll be here on race day Sunday as well. And I can't tell you what it means to me to be back here. On Friday, they had the carburation day, the final practice, and I was able to sit up in turn one and watch the cars. And earlier today they had some of the vintage cars, including a couple of the Indy cars that raced when I was coming here regularly as a young boy and later as a teenager and a college student to Indy. But one of the things on my dad's bucket list was something that they do uniquely here at the Speedway, as well as a number of tracks around the country. There's an IndyCar two-seater that they give people rides in, that you can actually spend the money. It costs about $500 for three laps with a professional racing driver driving, and you sit in the back seat. It is very cramped and crowded. And Dad told me a couple of months before he got sick that was on his bucket list. The noise behind me is the PA system starting up again with some historic sounds of the track. But it was on Dad's bucket list to ride in the IndyCar two-seater around the Speedway. And sadly, he never got to have that experience. While I was walking to my car Friday after carburation day at the end, I passed by the Dallara facility, which builds all of the chassis used in the IndyCar series. It's also the home of the Indy Racing Experience, which runs the two-seater program. And they also had something a little special as I was walking by. They have a street-legal two-seater. that they give rides in around the streets near the track in Speedway in the Indianapolis suburb of Speedway. It's $20. You better believe I spent the $20 to get in the back of an Indy car. Elliot Stevens, who never drove in Indianapolis but has raced in the past, was my driver. He gave me an experience I'll never forget. Once I wedged myself into the back seat of the car, I literally sat with my legs crossed. In the two-seater, you actually stick your legs around the driver. The cockpit's just a little bit wider. I couldn't get my legs in even taking my shoes off because I'm about 6'3" and somewhere north of 200 pounds. Elliot's about 5'7" and 160. He fit into that car a lot easier than I did. But he took me for about 5 or 6 minutes around the town of Speedway on the streets in a ride that I will never forget. And while I don't expect that I'll ever actually get to do the ride at the track, largely because for safety reasons, I don't think I could get my legs into the car, I was able to at least fulfill part of Dad's bucket list to ride in an Indy car two-seater and fulfill part of my own bucket list as well. And that, among anything else, is one of the highlights of this weekend so far. There'll be highlights and I'm sure a few tears tomorrow at the start of the race. If you've never been to Indianapolis, I heartily suggest you come. Longtime Indy 500 legendary car owner Andy Granatelli described it best today during the driver's meeting.
But I'm here because I love people and I love auto racing and I love this track, okay? There's nothing like it.
And I know I should have probably bleeped that, but last year he bleeped himself, and I wanted to actually run it because it's how I feel about this place. There is no place quite like the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on Memorial Day weekend. If you're a fan of motorsports at all, this is something you really need to do at least once. It should be on your bucket list. And even if you're not a fan of racing, it's one of those unique experiences. The last 45 minutes leading up to the singing of Back Home Again in Indiana, taps, the parade laps and pace laps, and the start of the race will bring a lump to your throat, no matter whether you're a race fan, no matter where you're from, you're going to get a lump in your throat, and you're going to wind up cheering like a damn fool idiot at the start of the race. I know that's what I'll be doing, and I want to thank my family for making it so easy and so possible for me to do it this weekend. I want to thank you for putting up with me for the last few minutes as I sort of vent and share some of my memories with you. Once again, you will find links for my Facebook page and Twitter feed at the WhiskeyCast website, along with the calendar of events, the photo gallery with some new photos in it, and my Facebook page, my personal one, does have some photos from this weekend as well. I didn't put any on the WhiskeyCast page yet. I may at some point. But you'll also find at the website a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases, and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2012. And this week I am at the home of the greatest spectacle in racing, truly the greatest race course in the world, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.